Morning, and thank you. Thank you all for coming. So, to begin the story today, what are sandflies? Sandflies are small, blood-feeding diptherans that, when you first look at them and glance, they have a general mosquito-like shape, although they're about a third the size and lack a long proboscis. Instead, they have small, slicing mouth parts. They also have very long legs and delicate, hairy wings, much like moth flies, which are also in the family Psychodidae. There are two main genera throughout the world, Lutzomyia being our New World genera. And they are major vectors of a number of dangerous pathogens to humans and animals, most notably the leishmaniasis, such as pictured here. The main player of our talk today is Lutzomyia shannoni, which is an anthropophilic species which occurs from Argentina up through the southeastern part of the United States. It has also been documented as a competent vector of at least three species of New World Leishmania, as well as possibly one Old World species, and a number of viruses, mainly the vesicular stomatitis virus. But the interesting thing about Lutzomyia shannoni is that recently we've been finding it in areas where it has never been seen before, which I'll show on this map. This is the historic range distribution of L. shannoni in the United States, and as you'll notice, it is mostly confined to coastal states. This is based on older literature, with the most northern inland record being here along the Tennessee border on the Mississippi River. That is until 2005, when military entomologists at Fort Campbell, Kentucky captured a number of these flies at that installation. These populations at Fort Campbell were monitored again in 2006, when a second population was noticed around the Lexington area. And at this time, we began looking at some of the seasonal fluctuations of these populations, and again, throughout 2007, when we also found some populations in southern Ohio, which is much further north than they'd ever been found. And since then, we've still monitored these populations to find out some more information. Now, what does this mean? What does these new dots on the map mean? We'll come back to that here in just a little bit. Before that, I want to talk about what we've been doing in these monitoring at these sites. So what this chart shows is basically a general phenology of the sandflies in western Kentucky. And the way we conducted these surveys, we set CDC light traps at standard sites beginning in June, which is the standard military protocol for sampling sandflies, and basically went until the end of the season. And what you'll notice is that the population stayed low and steady through midsummer, and then peaked and stayed up until it got cold and the sandflies went away. Now, what we didn't understand was what was going on right in this area here. What's this represent? Are these a few adults that somehow survived the winter under bark, much like Culex? Or were they blown up in early spring storms? Or is there another peak out here that we just don't know about? Maybe they overwintered as larvae. So we went back to some of the literature and found that it's been suggested for many species of New World sandflies or temperate sandflies that the larvae overwinter is in the fourth instar stage. There's also been some developmental data conducted on this species in growth chambers in South America, where they reared the species at the larvae at a set temperature and for over time. So from that data, we were able to figure out how much heat time, or in degree days, was needed for the larvae to complete development from this fourth instar stage, which we presume is what they're overwintering in, through adult. And from that, we decided, hey, we can figure out when these things are going to emerge in the spring. So we developed a heat unit accumulation model based on Baskerville and Emmons. It's an integrated sign method. And we tested it in the field at three different sites by setting traps and before and after the heat unit accumulation of 530 degree days occurred. And our results were consistent, which I'll show you in just a second. Then we validated our model using weather data for the past 10 years and on average found out that we had a forecast horizon of 14 days plus or minus 2 accuracy, which means that 14 days before an event will occur, we can predict when that event is going to occur within 2 days, which is pretty good. But how we tested this in the field is at Fort Campbell and also in Lexington, Central Kentucky, and in southwestern Ohio. We set CDC light traps, which are pictured here, as well as a modified CDC gravid trap, both baited with CO2 and light. And the idea here was that when the sandflies first emerged, they would probably be weaker flyers than those we're normally catching. So we set these lower gravid traps to hopefully catch those. And we actually had some success with this, that some of the early sandflies we caught were in these lower gravid traps. And as far as our consistency in the data, right after this 530 degree days was met, which we assumed from the growth chamber data, guess what? We caught sandflies right there. We hadn't caught them previously up to this point, and then we caught them. And it turns out there's actually another peak in the population then that we didn't even know about. As I mentioned, we also validated our model using weather data from UK weather stations. And what this says is that on average over the past 10 years of data, we went back through and figured out that at 14 days out, you have accuracy within 2 days before the event. So that gives us an idea of how good the model is. And so what can this be used for? We had to find some aspect. In addition to being the first time that someone's actually gone through and done some real world life history data on this using a degree day model for phenology of these flies, it also has an applied standpoint. And the idea here is if we know when the sand flies are first coming out in early spring, you see these are forest species. So you don't want to apply a residual insecticide that has a very long residual time because you'll kill a lot of non-targets that you don't really want to affect. But you can use, if we know exactly when they're coming out and that they peak maybe 2 weeks after that, you can apply something that has a very short but effective residual window, knock out the population early in the season before disease transmission would occur. This is in the event of an outbreak. But you would also reduce your risk on the environment, which is good. So we'll get back to the question of range now, like we mentioned earlier about the expansion possibly. What do these new dots mean? It could be that these things have always been there and we somehow missed them. Another possibility is that this is a new expansion of the range caused by some kind of a traumatic event or maybe even climate change as well. Oops. One of the possible explanations for this traumatic event is that in 2005, when the first flies were found at Fort Campbell, this was immediately after the residue of the storm Hurricane Katrina passed right through the area, as you can see in the map. And these, maybe it's coincidence or not, these samplings, these new records, fall right on that line, which is kind of interesting. It has also been warmer overall throughout the winter in Kentucky. This isn't something we just thought of. This is actual real data that has been warmer the past several years in this area. So maybe it's allowing them to survive the winters better than they could have previously. Maybe sand flies have been blown into Kentucky before but couldn't survive our winters. Some additional support is that since we've been collecting sand flies down there since 2005, we have an idea of what kind of trap rates we catch. And as you can see by these graphs, they've gone up significantly just from the first year of collection where we just got a few flies to now where we find over 100 in a trap per night, which is pretty significant. It's also pretty hard to miss. Another thing that's even harder to miss is that here over the past couple years, we've also found a mosquito species, Culex niger palpus, which had been known from Kentucky, but out of very few collections. I'll show you a range map here in just a second. It had been attributed to Kentucky and Darcy and Ward from a paper by Charlie Covell, which actually was based on three specimens. And it's known to be that the species known to expand its range in warmer years, which actually the map looks a lot like El Shannonai, if you look at it. The gray area is the historic map based on Darcy and Ward. And then the blue dots are what we've been finding here over the past couple years. If you notice, it follows basically the same trend as the sandfly. Now, the interesting thing about this isn't just an artifact. The sandflies, they're really small. Maybe we missed them. But this is a mosquito which has been studied, mosquitoes in general, for over 50 years in Kentucky, in Lexington and Louisville under professional study. Especially in the mid-2000s during the West Nile Project. So it's very unlikely that it's just been missed for 50 years and now we're just now seeing it. It's very likely this is a new expansion. So basically what all this means is that we've seen some significant expansions in the range and also threats to public health, with sand flies being potentially transmitting leishmaniasis and other viruses, and of course the Culex niger palpus, as many of you may know, is a major vector in the south of encephalitis viruses, especially SLE. And there appears to be some kind of connection between the climate and weather patterns, and the most interesting thing about this may presage additional expansions of other insects, not just vectors but possibly crop pests, maybe birds, mammals, or maybe even invasive plants as well. There's been some anecdotal reports of other insects also in this area expanding as well. But the interesting thing about our research that we've seen is that there does seem to be some predictability of at least the sandfly populations, and maybe it gives us some better control options for the future in the event of a disease outbreak. Because just like we've seen here with the vector expansion, we might also see disease expansion. So it could be interesting to see if we see any more. I saw a talk earlier mentioning Tritoma expanding in a similar way. So we may see more. And with that, I would like to acknowledge the following people and ask if anyone has any questions. Yes?
What did Lutzemeyer larvae eat and where are they found?
Well, that's a really good question. Someone asked, what did Lutzemeyer larvae eat and where are they found? Typically, Lutzemeyer larvae eat decaying material, leaves, manure, things like that, and are found in the soil. Here's the catch. Lutzemeyer shannoni has never been found in the wild. It's only been reared in laboratory. So that's what's really interesting about this. We were able to take laboratory data and apply it to the field, and it worked. We found out when they emerged. So we're still trying to find them, but we haven't. It's been tried for years. So, but. Yes?
You showed the path of Hurricane Katrina. Hurricane
yes.
Ike goes through Beaumont, goes through Missouri and Arkansas. There was apparently no record of the sand fly there. Would you expect to see the sand fly popping up there?
Well, you might. The interesting thing about Ike and some of these hurricanes this summer is right after Hurricane Faye, this is just another example, one of these anecdotal reports I mentioned, which the rest of it came up through Kentucky, we saw a whole bunch of Gulf fritillary butterflies show up in our state. I saw them in southwest Kentucky, and I was talking to someone who was in the Lepidoptera Society meeting recently and told me the same thing. They saw them in Lexington even, which they occasionally will show up there, but it's fairly uncommon. And like I said, you know, things are moving, it looks like, at least based on that. Butterflies are a little easier to see. People go out and look at butterflies, Lepidopteras especially. Sandflies are a little harder to detect. But that's the nice strength about finding Niger palpus is people have been looking for culex extensively for many years and haven't found that as heavily as we found. We've been finding hundreds. So, one more, yeah.
How many cases of leishmaniasis have been described from this species?
How many cases of leishmaniasis have been described from this species of leishmaniasis?
Ascribed to this.
Oh, ascribed. There have been three species of leishmania in South America. One species, Elma mexicana, is a species that's found in Texas. There have been a recent study on L. major, which is the Iraqi form, although it's still in works. They haven't completed it. They found out that the parasite develops, but they're not sure about transmission yet. Does that answer your question? No. I'm sorry, I guess I didn't.